On today's Tough Juice podcast, I got none other than, you know, one of my best teammates that I ever played with, Bonafide Superstar, No Chill Podcast, Gilbert Arenas, a.k.a. Agent Zero. And we talk about all type of things. We go into, you know, layers of his NBA career, how we evaluate the game, how we see the game. And we put a lot of people on notice, people that really don't understand the layers of discussion and how you evaluate the game of basketball, analytical driven stuff. Throw that shit out the window. We talking real discussion about real basketball from real true high basketball IQ heads. Listen to this on the Himalaya app or wherever you listen to your pods.
So whereas if you see LeBron and you guys saw, I think you guys pretty much had the best shot at a young, crazy, athletic, ridiculously talented LeBron, and you had to take that on. Mm-hmm. So you're like, okay, LeBron, I got him.
Yeah, you know what? I tried to limit LeBron as much as possible. LeBron is still great.
But at that point, what were you trying to take away?
I'm gonna tell you, I was trying to limit him as much as possible in transition. He wasn't able to shoot, wasn't able to make perimeter shots. So he was dominant going right, try to keep the ball out of his right hand, try to force him to be a playmaker. Even though I knew that was his strength, I didn't want him trying to score the ball like every game. So some games we would try to make him be a playmaker and hopefully that he gave the ball to a Damon Jones or something and force him to score 30 or 40. But then some games it was like, okay, let's see if you can score 40 and 50. And he did. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I think that was the story of the playoffs with us because he was able to score the basketball.
Do everything. It was like he was doing everything we wanted him to do that we didn't want him to do.
Yeah.
Like
we baited him.
Like we bait him. Okay, yo, you make them motherfuckers beat us.
He did.
And he's passing it to him. Like,
they making the shot.
Like, we're not winning. Marshall, yeah. Like, even if they miss it, he's still passing it. Like, yo, we don't we think you're going to force the shit up.
Try to do too much.
And to do too much. And he's like, oh, you're going to make me pass it 30 times? Okay. And they were like, oh, readjust. Then he scores. Mm-hmm. I think our biggest thing that we didn't take into consideration was our backups was smaller than him. So when you put a Michael Ruffin in as the center, right, and your back line is 6'8". And when we hear LeBron 6'8", without his shoes, 6'8 and a half, without his shoes, no one realizes that's 6'10 on the basketball court with his shoes on. Mm-hmm. So if our four men or five men at a time is 6'8 with his shoes and you have 6'10 with his shoes running in a lane with a 44-inch vertical, no one's that rim is not as protected as we think it is. See, so I started realizing, like, wait a minute. When he wants to drive and get to the rim, he looks over there. They pull Legauskas. We pull Brendan. Him and Larry Hughes drives all day because we have no big man. And that was, like if you look at all the game winners, Brendan was never in.
Yeah. We had no size.
Yeah, we had no size. And
even
at
when
that
he
point,
tiptoed on the baseline.
Tiptoed. And, you know, he's no going size. Over Michael Ruffin like, you too little. It's like, yeah. He's the biggest. At that point, he's the biggest person on the, mm-hmm. on the thing. And the sad part is we beat them, but in chess, they beat us because they had a move that we wasn't paying attention to. Yeah. We're, it's that whole thing of, okay, they're going small, we're going to go small. Not realize, he's still big. And we go small, it benefits him because he gets to drive with no one able to block his dunk.
Even when trapping him, to Gilbert's point, like, Brendan wasn't in on a lot of the traps. So, like, he was able to see over the help that was coming to possibly take the ball out of his hand. So that's a routine pass for someone that's as gifted as him. He's like,
Like, I'm over to come to double A.
It's not like he has to. You know, he's just like, okay, boom. That's where I wanted the ball to go anyway. So now you're at a disadvantage because we're playing 3-on-2 basketball headed towards the rim. And another thing was in transition, it was tough because, you know, you elect to pick him up three quarters of the court, try to slow down his momentum. But that didn't help us because the pick still came, and then he was going downhill anyway. Mm-hmm. So the thing that I learned, like, in 2011, when I was a part of the championship team and championship run, they did a 3-2 zone, Dallas. Mm-hmm. So all we did was just sit on the perimeter. We had three up front, two in the back, and Brendan was out there. And when you have three up top, two in the back, you take a lot of shit out the game, a lot of in-between shit, mm-hmm. a lot of everything, because you force two of the best in the game at the time that lived in the paint in Dwayne Wade. I think it was Dwayne Wade, Tony Parker, and LeBron James. You got two of those guys mm-hmm. living on the perimeter. And I literally saw, like, and this one I knew he wasn't winning a championship. I literally saw LeBron and Dwayne, like, our distance, and Dwayne threw to LeBron. LeBron was naked. He was wide open. Could have shot the three. And he threw it back to Dwayne. And Dwayne threw it back, said, shoot the dead, like shoot the fucking ball. Like, this is in the fight. It was like, and LeBron and I want to shoot the perimeter shot. And I looked, I was like, we're about to win a damn championship. Because I just knew that was the moment mm-hmm. that they just, it just wasn't there.
Because that was them. So early for them, too. They had,
yeah, they didn't figure it out yet.
Yeah, and you would think that, yo, he shoots threes all the time. He shoots the threes he wants to shoot all the time. Off the dribble, yeah. Let me do my little step back. So,
but that, like, even, he wasn't doing that when you guys played him, early Cleveland.
If you look at his percentage, he still shot off dribble. High. Yeah. Off dribble. You know, so that pass straight to him, mm-hmm. and he shoots it. That wasn't a shot. So Dwayne's like, shoot it. And he's like, he wanted to say, but that ain't my shot. What the fuck you want me to just shoot, chuck this shit up for? So that's what I'm saying. But you got to remember, if someone's playing, chess in their head, okay, I'm going to drive a couple plays, get in a suck in. I'm going to pass a couple. It's like that Mike Tyson theory. Someone has a game plan. Mm-hmm. See, a 3-2 knocks his game plan off because he wasn't expecting a 3-2.
And Rick Carlisle said it. I don't give a fuck if he makes six. That's on me. Post game, I'll address that. Like, that's not on y'all. That's on me. And everybody bought into that. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. with us, it was like, from a competitive standpoint, like, if I'm guarding LeBron, he scored fucking 10 in a row. It's like, dude, like, goddamn, I ain't doing that shit no more. And it was just like, we just like, yo, that shit, we balled that shit out the window. But it was like, no, play the number game. Because this may work now, but now you're fucking up all those guys' rhythm. Mm-hmm. So when he do throw it to them, the one-offs that they probably would make, they have no
half
flow.
Asleep, right.
Yeah, but, like, just wasn't able to process that in real time.
Yeah.
It's a trust thing.
Yeah, no, in a game like that. But that's the thing we learn when we're older.
Yeah.
You know, you're getting to that age when you're younger and you're saying, all right, with Steve Nash, because I had this problem guarding Steve Nash. There's a pick and roll, and you want me to go over it, and then Brendan sags. To, like, keep that Amari from dunking. Fuck Amari from dunking. Trap this motherfucker. I want to try. I want to get the ball out. Let him throw it to Amari. Like, so I'm getting my ass busted because he got the little floater game. He got the coming off the Western A game. Now I want to go under. Now I'm saying, you know, fuck this. I'm going to go under to stop it. I go under. He hits the three. Now I'm like, shit, I look stupid. Let me go back over. I go back over. He cracks me. They dunking. Now I'm sitting there trying to edit because he done already hit three they way, and now I look stupid. Now I want to edit. Now he just hit 12 on my edit. I'm like, oh, fuck now.
Your ego won't let that happen.
Yeah, but that's what ends up happening is that we have a game plan, and the game plan goes against the ego. Like, whoa, wait, hold on. This is my player right here. Right, this motherfucker got eight already. Though. He only averaged seven.
Then you start thinking, these motherfuckers try to set me up. You know what I'm saying?
Like, you're all the way in your
head. Yeah, you're like, you start thinking crazy. Like, they trying to embarrass me on the net. You telling me to go, do that shit make sense? And don't go home, like, with it.
Yep.
And you talking to your rah-rah folks. They're like, yeah, man, I don't think the coach fuck with you. You know what I'm saying? Like, he exposing you. So it just look crazy.
Mm-hmm. Like, imagine I got a guard, Westbrook, right? And he's guarding Cal Corver, right? And the game plan is to keep Westbrook out the lane. So, Karan, be at the elbow, right? I don't care if he passes the car. Now, Cal Corver hit two threes. Oh, he ain't going to be at the elbow next time.
I'm gone.
He going to do one of these. now Westbrook coming out like, come on, man. But that's the game, you know what I mean? So, you know.
And you figure it out now at this point. But
when,
but
when teams win champion, and so when players say we had to trust each other,
that's
what that is. Like, it ain't trusting, like, give me the ball in the sweat. It's trusting that whatever the game plan is, just trust that the numbers of everything that's going. So if Cal Corbett hits two threes, please be there when Westbrook drives for that third time. You know, instead of saying, I'm not going to let this motherfucker look good on me, and you give me the half, and now he goes and dunks, and then the next time you're there, then he hits the three, the next time, like, oh, that's three on me, then he goes and dunks, and now you're just, you know, you're just getting pity-pat. You're just getting pity-pat. So when teams be like, yo, we just had to learn how to trust each other. It's usually trust each other on the defensive end, usually never the offensive end. It's always usually the defensive end when teams say, yo, we got to trust each other. Like, trust, like, I remember when I was in Orlando, and I'm around Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard rule was like, listen, don't reach. Like, you know, I ain't gonna reach. Motherfucker blow past me, like, oh, shit. Foul. Yo, I told you, don't reach. Let them finish over me. Like, don't bail them out. Let them finish. I don't care about your defense. I don't care if they blow past you. Don't bail them out. Let me finish the play. Like, all right, okay. And I just seen a one-man defensive juggernaut. Like, but look at our lineup. Like, when you said small ball, you got me, Jameer Nelson, and then J.J. Redick on the floor with a loop, with a Turkaloo. They got four bad defensive players, and this one man shutting it all down. Like, I mean, you could have gave us any fake hesitation.
Come on.
And he's just like, just make sure they come to me and don't reach. That was don't reach. Don't bail them out. Don't reach in and foul. They got to finish over me. And I just seen him just, like, destroy. I remember we playing Miami. They was up like 18, you know, at halftime. And
all guys that was go right to the basket.
LeBron and Dwayne just, and then second half, he was like, yo, are y'all going to listen? Bring them to me. Trust me. I'm going to hit them motherfuckers one good time hard. They're going to hit that wood. They can't beat the wood. Mm-hmm. And they'll stop driving. Sure enough, came in there, tried to dunk it, bodied them, boom.
That was Tyson Chandler.
Mm-hmm. Mid-range, jumper.
That's
jumper.
Exactly how Tyson Chandler was. Just what? Because he was in a contract season, and you just knew that his activity around the rim was going to be different. And I think that's an understatement. People always talk about the championship run that we had and, you know, me going down in January, guys rallying around the team, guys stepping up in a major way, acquiring Peja. And I always say that the biggest adjustment that we did make was acquiring Tyson Chandler, because I felt like he gave everybody, like, a luxury to – not exert themselves on defense. So they was able to preserve their offense because they was fresher. Jason Terry probably had one of the best years of his career because he was fresher. Dirk, even though he wasn't playing defense that much, you know, he was able to just say, look, I'm just going to crowd the guy. And okay, it's okay if he blow by because you see what we got back here? And his activity, like, talk about his synapses and his fast twitch muscles. Like, he was just
– yeah.
Contract year, he was like, I'm going to put on a demonstration. And that's exactly what he did.
Did he go to the Olympics off that team?
He went to the Olympics. Yeah. He but got paid in New York.
Because I remember I said he was an all-star, and you didn't know that.
Yeah. But you see how, like, we understand. And that's why I like, when someone who hasn't played the game, when they talk, and it's hard to argue with them, because if they never played to say, hold on, that guy importance to this team is very high, because he allows everyone to be free, to be fresher, to not play as hard. Like Trevor Ariza to James Harden helps James Harden get 40. Like, you know, or right now you got
and people don't understand what he's saying when he say that.
PJ Tucker to James Harden helps James Harden get 40. Well, I mean, because
go ahead.
Because PJ Tucker is willing to say, hey, I'm in the corner when you need me, big bro. I'll go offensive rebound. Whoever thinks about whoever tries to, you know, that you got to guard, I got that. Don't worry.
I'm going to guard your position.
I'm going to guard your position. Mm-hmm. I'm going to guard whoever you got, whoever's trying to get you tired, I got them. Hang out. Do you on offense, I'll clean up the rest of it. That's why PJ's important. So when we look at PJ's like, yo, if they get rid of this motherfucking man, bring in a what's-his-name man, they'd be good. No. Now that exposes James Harden defensively because now he got to sick someone. And yo, and I had that luxury with Deshaun Stevenson.
Yep.
Like, yo, hey, D, this motherfucker's giving it to me real quick. Go hit it. Feel like I don't know where about it. And, you know, and that's what, you know, same thing with Jared Jeffries. You know, he was a guy who sit there and clean little things up, you know, for everyone. So it's like when you hear it now, it's like, yo, this person. I'm like, hey, y'all, yes, you're missing it a little bit because you have to have played to understand the importance of it. So you can, that's what I said, you can look at my stat sheet and say, oh no, this man didn't pass the ball. Look at it, 5 assists. Unless you were Karan and played with Karan and know Karan, like, yo, my 20-point guy didn't need me. He didn't need me to score. Just give him the ball. Like, yo, hey. Yo, no, come on over here. Like, all right.
Look at me.
Hey, like, hey. Sorry, Twan. Like, I was trying to get number 10, but that motherfucker called for it. You know, it's one of those. So we, as a group, we got 120 points. I got 2 assists. So we be like, yeah, that motherfucker selfish. Like, no. The way we score, just like a John Wall and a Beal. Beal doesn't need a John Wall to score. Just give him the ball. He going to do his thing. So John Wall, like if John Wall, like a John Wall didn't have Beal, he probably averaged 15 assists. But the fact that he has another superstar, but this superstar can create his own shot, it takes away his assists. Yeah, so it's hard to value what you can't value someone's game off of numbers.
Yeah, I was going to say, what we care about now are numbers and highlights. That's what you said. Like, I think I watched the game. I'd watched some stuff on Instagram, and then I looked at the numbers. Like, they'll just show a picture, and it's like 44 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists.
Yeah, we look at like...
There's way more to those numbers.
Yeah, like when people say analytics, it's better to shoot the 3 or the layup. For certain players... And I think that's where people are getting misunderstood with analytics. I watched the Charlotte and New York game, right? And I said, someone needs to tell these two teams, analytics is not on their side. They cannot, they are not, like you're doing analytics off of Klay Thompson, Steph, Durant, James Harden.
Cream on the crop.
Like you're talking the top 5, you know, best shooters in the NBA, you're trying to run an analytic off of them saying it's better to shoot free throws and threes. But the rest of the league is just now you got the whole Charlotte bench. I think they went like 10 for 48. Yeah, that's what your analytics is doing. They think they can just chuck threes. They are bottom feeding 3-point shooters.
Yeah.
Trying to chuck threes like they are superstars. So the analytics does not play well. I'm sitting here looking like, what?
What is this?
Like, you got 20 points in the first period? Like, yeah, you know, this is the 7th, 8th, 9th, 3-pointer in a row. You're open, bro, because you suck. That's why they're leaving you open. Yeah, keep shooting and chuck that shit. And I'm sitting here like, yo, this is just... bad basketball. Like, yeah, that works for this group. That doesn't work for the other 380-something player. It doesn't work for that group. It works for this crop. They are the best sharpshooters. It's not telling everybody else, hey, yo, go out there and do you. Like, nah, y'all got to play the game the regular-ass way.
That's why I hate coaches that come to organizations that have, like, systems that's implemented, and they don't compliment the players that you have.
Right, it's the my way or the highway coach.
Yeah, it's like, You can have that system, like, for instance, right? It's two situations, like Carmelo's situation when he was with OKC. And I'll never forget Coach Donovan. I'm in a pre-production meeting. I'm sitting there talking to him prior to the game, and this is in March. And I'm like, how do you incorporate Carmelo into what you doing? Like, Carmelo already played 50-plus, 60-plus games. And he's like, I'm still trying to figure this out. I'm like, yo, that shit, like, the figuring out stage happens, like, first 10, 15 games tops. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, like, now you're trying to figure out how to feature Carmelo at this point of the season still. Like, I know that you're not going to be successful because immediately you should, all right, Carmelo, I know you want to start. I'm going to start you. I'm pulling you at the 8-minute mark or 9-minute mark because you want to keep that starter tag attached to you. And I respect that. So I'll let you start. I'll pull you out early. And then I'll put you in with the second unit to feature you. Mm-hmm. So you can play your half-court game and do your shit.
Yep.
So I was like, you know what? You're not adjusting to the personnel that you have. And if you don't do that, you can't be successful. Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid. Ben Simmons plays like a four man. He's not shooting jumpers. We celebrate when he makes one in the preseason. You know what I mean? So, like, Joel Embiid, fourth quarter, 4 minutes to go in the game to go to the finals in the Eastern Conference Finals. You have Joel Embiid doing a three-man weave on the perimeter. Now, this is the biggest man on the court, and you're in the bonus. So Brett Brown is putting him at a disadvantage. You have a system in play, but you're not catering to the personnel that you have. So just like when I see things like that, I'm just like, yo, this shit is like, it's mind-boggling. But you're playing the analytical game where you're like, well, the numbers say that if I should, the game tell you what to do. The players and the personnel and the strengths of their ability tell you what you should do with these guys.
Like, it's just, it's always been my understanding as, you know, as players growing up. All right, you know, be coachable. You know, be coachable. To grow up to get to the highest level that there is, to realize, well, damn, this motherfucker don't know nothing. Like, you.
And can you say that as a player?
Like, yeah. I got to sit
I'm
here.
I'm just saying, like, can you say that as a player?
Yeah, I got to sit here and win a penalty, and you want to do a drive weave. Tim Duncan, the best defender, got 4-5 fouls. One foul fouls him out, and we got 6 minutes to go. If we get him out of the game.
Game over.
Game over. Defensively and offense, they're done. Either we're going to say, hey, Brendan, and we're going to have to come to you, pal. Hey, we just need you. I don't give a fuck if you kick that motherfucker up there. Make a move.
Hard.
Make a move hard to do something. Don't do a fucking fadeaway like you want to do. I need you to do a hook. Pound that motherfucker in. We need a foul on him. So when you see shit like that, you say, where did you learn basketball? Where did you learn? Did you learn it from a coach? You coaching off of a coach? Like, I never understood when they pulled us 2 minutes into the last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, wait, hold on.
Let's finish the quarter.
Yeah, no, I'm going to finish. We're going to finish this goddamn quarter. Goddamn it. Like, yo, it's this is penalty time. We didn't get hit by Shaq that whole time to be sitting on the bench when it's eating time to go back into the top of the second to get hit by him again. No. I'm gonna eat right now free because, you know, I've dealt with it. Like, you know, so it's little things like that. I just look at coaches and say, who, like, I don't know who's hiring you, but if I own a team, I want the best of the best. Because I have $500 million sitting on that bench.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that $500 million that I got invested, I want the best around it to make sure it's excelling, it's getting better, it's fine-tuned, it's fed well, it's getting the right trainers, right strategy. I want the best. You do it in your CEO companies.
Yep.
You do it in Microsoft. You got the you put out little tests. Hey, see who can hack me and get $10 million. All you're doing is recruiting. You're recruiting. hey, is there someone out there smarter than what I have hired here? So now they know you're attacking. So if you attack it, you're better than them.
Yeah, cause functionally, yep. You know, you look at some assembly lines, robots can run assembly lines. They can meet numbers and be efficient in those numbers. But you still need somebody to run the machines.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And that's how I look at the game. Like, I need somebody to know this shit inside mm-hmm. out better than just that.
Well, I mean, I would, first of all, to answer your question, can you say that to a coach? I think you can as a pro. I don't think you can in any other level.
What's right? that?
The question. You ask, can you question a coach? Can you call them
the
out?
You play?
Yeah. You can't say that as a college coach.
I mean, in the proper setting, you could.
Yeah. At the end of the day, like, no, in as long as you don't embarrass, just like with a ref, you can say whatever you want to the ref as long as it doesn't embarrass him.
Right.
And that's why when you see that shirt go over that mouth, usually it's cuss words behind it. But because you're not embarrassing the ref usually doesn't blow that whistle. Because he understands, like I had to have, you know, talks with refs, like, hey, listen, like, if you missed a call and I cussed you out, please don't penalize me again. You already fucked me right here. Let me get my frustrations off, because if you give me a penalty, that means you didn't hold your cool either. So what makes you better than me? I'm frustrated in real time, and I'm giving you what I have. Eventually, I'm going to go away. So for you to give me a tech and penalize me again means you got upset. You know, I'm human. You're human. I understand sometimes they're going to blurt out. Jay, just be like, yo, hey, shut the fuck up. Get your crying ass on, you know? Hey, yeah. And we do. Like, those are the refs I like. Yo, shut your little whiny ass up and go play some fucking basketball. Like, all right, man. You know what I mean? You know, those are the refs that really get.
Monty's one of those guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, like I don't need to take you up. I just tell you, you acting like a little girl. You know, you do stuff like that. No, serious. And we be like, yeah.
I had one of the worst games of my life I started off with. I was like 0 for 8, 0 for 7, and Monty was calling it. And I looked at him, and I was just like, I was just tired, bro. I was running in quicksand. And I was like, motherfucker, and this, that, and. He looked at me. He was like, I'm not throwing you out. I'm not throwing you out this game. I'm going to make sure you stay out here and you, like, kind of suffer and go
suffer,
through
it. Yeah.
Yeah. He was like, I'm not throwing you out. Like, I
take
don't
it
care.
Like a man. Like,
and it was the funniest shit ever, but it made us close, because every time I see Monty, I'll just be like, what's up, man? It's just our vibe. Yeah.
And those are the guys. And that's like, but that's part of the game, because I remember that happened with Jerry Stackhouse. Jerry Stackhouse was, he was playing horrible. And we were losing by 20, 30. He wanted to get the hell out of this game. He was done. And he's trying everything. Why you? And the ref said, hey, don't kick him out. He needs to get this ass whooping like the rest of them. He ain't going to sit in the back with his little thing on and his clothes on while the rest of them. No, he going to catch this ass whooping like the rest of them. And I'm sitting here laughing because he's even mad that he has to sit there down 30. So there was an over the back play. Dude went over the back, right? He ain't fouling. He just got the ball like this, right? And Stack turns around, gets mad, chokes the dude, body slams him, boom. Referee blows
him. Sound ball, right?
Blows him with a bah! Got 5 fouls. Foul! Over the back. Stack lost it. Because it was a 6th foul. He should have been out, like, for body slam. But he called him over the back. Stack got so mad, he ended up kicking the ball. Then they had to kick him out. But it was one of those things. Damn. Where it was like, yeah, because he got mad that the guy didn't give him the foul that he wanted. Kicked the ball, and then they eventually kicked him out.
Damn.
But then, you know, refs is like that. That's the only thing I'm like, ref, like, yo, be human. Like, just be human. Like, understand this is an emotional game. I'm gonna say some shit I really don't mean in real time.
Very.
So don't pop me right there. So I always try to learn refs' names. Instead of, hey, ref, call that shit. You know, like, you know, that damn, you know, that motherfucker know my name, so I need to know his name. Like, yo, yeah, Monty.
You had to know how to work the refs.
Yeah, you just, you know, so when you do something out of character, they don't penalize you right there. Because you gotta remember, at any given moment, anything can happen. You know, and, you know, you something happened, you done lost your cue. Like, I know when Chris Paul's going to get a foul. You know, he going to go do his little bumps. They ain't going to call it. He done turned the ball over.
He addressed the ref.
He going to address the ref.
The next play, he good.
He going to address the ref. They going to give him a tag, and then he going to give one of those little dumb fouls. Like, you know, you already know. It's like, I'm going to stop the game to let you know you did me wrong.
Yeah.
You know, so he's going to get one or two of those a game. And I knew that, and I always worked him against that. Let him do his little thing. Okay, it's a 1-4 flat. He can't play defense now. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, so you just sitting there knowing everyone's habits. You know, but it's like, but you have to play this game to really get under that
know
hood
the ins and out.
And understood. And I just don't like some of these benches that just don't have proper, like, yo, you guys can be so much better. Like who's teaching you guys, who's teaching your players how to be great? I don't see Kobe on the Lakers.
Yeah.
I don't see these guys like you told us the blackout story, which I knew the blackout story too. Like, you know, watching him and how he performs. Who's teaching the Devin Bookers how to work out? The Kyries how to get better.
It's crazy that you said Devin Booker, because I think Devin got an educational lesson this summer when he was talking about not being able to play.
Who
against,
chimed in on that?
Yeah, the 2 and 3 defenders.
Facing double teams when you're trying to run
but
in the summer.
That's the story of the game, and I'm glad he went out there on social media and said something, because that's what you don't have no more. You don't have, like, some of the former greats teaching and pouring into the guys that's looking to cross over and take it to the next level. So he was giving him a proper explanation on, dude, you have to be able to play against double and triple teams. You know what I mean? You have to be able to be the focal point of the offense and still be able to be productive. You know what I'm saying? So, like, don't think that you just, you know, you're going to have a typical day. That's basically your audience and your peers saying, I can't guard you. You are a bad motherfucker. I'm giving you your credit. I need 2 or 3 people to guard you. And you're saying, you know what? Even that shit don't work.
Yep.
And that's letting you know, like, you're different. Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant, Gilbert Arenas, they you would never hear them go to a sidekick or a two-way, or when he was blogging saying, man, you know what? I had 3 people guard me today in the gym. I didn't like that shit. That's part of it. That's part of being part of the different guys. Yeah.
And what's so funny is they played in the game. He got double teamed, turned the ball over 3 times, right? Mm-hmm. But we did have a conversation, right? And he was like, "Man, it's just frustrating. I'm just trying to get work, right?" And I said, "The funny part about this, you're gonna learn what I'm saying. What I'm saying right now, you're gonna naturally learn it in about 3 years. I'm just giving it to you early. See, what you're gonna learn is this." In practice, right? In the NBA practice, what are you practicing against? You practice against other people's plays. You practice against, you know, you're doing your plays. They're not double teaming you, then.
Yeah.
You're not going against double teams in your practice. You're just practicing, right? So the only time you see a actual double is in the game. So if you've never prepared for a double, your game gets cut. So what ends up happening is you have to put yourself in situations that it don't count. But see, the game counts. See, the game actually counts. So, summer league, summertime, NBA players, they double me. Let's go. So, because you got to remember that, hey, I can lose 20 games in a row. It don't count, you know, but I get to learn against real players in real moments. What to do against doubles. Okay, how fast is this guy going? This and this and this. Because once that season start, every time someone doubles you, they neutralize you because you've never – this is when you're seeing it for the first time.
Shock treatment.
Yeah, you know, and I'm just saying. So I only learned it because I seen someone practicing.
Right, I think you've said this before. It's also just you are comfortable with the discomfort. I mean, you said that, but you're in. Mm-hmm. You're saying like you would take on – let me go 1-on-5. You know, but if I can handle that shit, I can handle anything.
But you have to understand that, this is there's a game. They throw you in front of this basketball world, right? To perfect it, to know how it all runs, you have to understand all the elements of it. You have to understand refs, people. So, okay, let me play the people game with the refs, call them by their real name, talk to them, put the shirt under here. You know, this, okay, fans, you know, this is 2 hours of their life that they're trying to be entertained, you know, and not think about the world. Let me, you know, hit a shot. Hey, what up? Hey, how you doing? Grab a little popcorn, fall on the lady. How you doing? You know,
it's part of the experience.
It's part of the, you know,
all that,
this, but different ways, right? Because different players
approach that. Different ways. Like, he had the ball, yeah. Like, you know.
It's entertainment, man. And when you embrace it to the level of what Gilbert's talking about, that's what makes you different. You know what I mean? I think a lot of guys don't understand the game within the game. Mm-hmm. They don't understand the business.
They're not built for it.
No, they're not.
They've never been taught it.
Yeah.
They've never understood. They just go out there and I got to do it. But you got to understand, like, you got to, that's what I'm saying. It's listening to people. Hey, what's up? Like, yeah, man, I just came to the, you know, I'm going through a divorce right now. So, you know, the Wizards is the only thing that I can, you know, really root for. These 2 hours of my day really gives me, you know, just hearing that story says, there's probably other people up here that this is entertainment for them. Let me throw my shirt off. Yay, let's go. And, you know, just to, you know, it's one of those, like somebody like Embiid. Yo, that's, you know, get the fight on it. He's sitting there like, yeah, that's part of it. It's part of the show.
Okay,
that's so what makes him a megastar.
This is, so Embiid's way of handling social media. This is a perfect example of knowing how to handle your teammates, coaches, refs, fans. Media is a whole different beast. You were prepared for that.
We're all over time. We're all prepared for it.
Embiid is very good at it. Understanding social media, your approach is different, but you're gonna welcome that. Where some guys like KD is a bit sensitive on social media.
Is he?
We've seen burner accounts.
I'm saying though, is he?
I mean,
I think, well, sometimes you're like, man, don't worry about that.
What makes KD sensitive?
I guess I shouldn't say sensitive. We're surprised that he cares as much as he does.
That's so funny. That is the perfect answer. Why does he care? Why shouldn't he? Why shouldn't he care about what you say about him?
You're saying he should, yeah.
No, what I'm saying is, see.
Okay, if Gucci, they did the blackface thing. That's a product. That's a content they put out into the universe. That's something that didn't sit well with our people. Mm-hmm. Did they care or did they continue to, you know, pivot and do something different?
I think they were unaware.
They was unaware? So
they should have never done it.
They should have never done it. So now KD is aware of his audience. He's aware of who he's performing in front of, what they do and don't like. And if you have, like, even sometimes with organizations, they send out PIs, private detectives, all this different stuff, and they gather information. That's the same equivalent to a burner account. You're sending out something that's not identified as you, but it is you, mm-hmm. working at a grassroots level to retain information to know what you should do going forward. You know what I mean? I think that's calculated judgment. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know the audience of the people that like you, that dislike you, that, and you know the pulse of what it is. So you're the content. Mm-hmm. So you're going to put out what you feel you should put out to continue to move the needle as a superstar. You think other superstars don't do that? They create media platforms and control their narratives, and then they tell their story. You get what I'm saying? Like, so everybody care, no matter if you LeBron James or whoever, like, if you get bad insight or bad comments, it matters. You know what I mean? That's a blow to your brand.
Yeah, I think you absolutely should care. So for Kate and Katie's point, yeah, absolutely, he should care. And I think he also should use that as motivation, fuel. Take those trolls and those haters and shut them up. So for you to know that, 10% of those people are always going to talk shit. That's just what they do.
Yeah, 10 are going to love it. No, see, the problem is media forgets. No, they forget we're real. They assume that you're going to take what I say. I don't care if you like it or not. So what ends up happening is, if we're having a bad game or something and you ask a dumb question and I give you a real answer, a real one, he's ranting. See, no, they want that corporate. Yeah, you know, we did this and that. See, that's the fake. See, we give you fake interviews 90% of the time. It's a fake. It's calculated, fake answers with fake emotions and all of that. See, that ain't the real us. Like, if the real us came out, someone just hit a game winner in my face, and you asked me,
how do you feel?
What happened on the last play? How do you feel? If you don't get the fuck out of my face, bro, before I punch the shit out of you, is my real answer. But I got to say, well, you know, he made a great move and this and this and this, and then when you walk away, fucking jackass. You know what I mean? The answers you're getting throughout the year is felonious. That's why when two players get on a microphone together, you learn something for the first time. Like, oh my God, I didn't learn KD did this and Karan did this. And because we know how to communicate with each other, because we know what not to ask.
You know each
how
other.
To ask. We know it's like, you know, players know, like, yo, you can't ask that. That's a dumbass question.
Honestly, I think the media should know too.
They don't know better. They want to sell.
But if I spend enough time around, you know, guys that were around you,
like,
I spend enough time around you and around the team, shit, every game. I know this is the way Gil would answer this. I'm going to anticipate that.
Like, you know
so
how.
So I don't ask like, a dumb question. Well, I don't like, want to ask a dumb
like
question.
Walsh, like Walsh. Have you noticed he has everything? He gets everything in real time, all the time. He's gotten his relationships and protected his relationship and his sources to the point where I don't care who you are, you're going to give him your information because he's protected. So any one of us, if we have some good information, we'll give it to him because he's protected. See, you have to understand power. See, power is not leaking something. Oh, I got it. I want to put it out there first. No, real power is understanding that these relationships are more important. I get real information, real time, everything going on, protecting
and reporting my sources properly.
And reporting properly with no bias. Like Stephen A. Smith, right? He signed a new deal. Like $8 million, right? This is a real question. Did you hear one player, one professional athlete say anything negative about it?
Nope.
Not fucking one. How many contracts has he disapproved of, criticized? See, that's the difference between players and media. See, we understand, yo, if a motherfucker paid you, then you're fucking worth it. Who are we to judge what you signed? So we respect, hey, $8 million, congratulations, goddammit, hey, good shit. Just remember, next time one of us sign a deal, understand that zero players had anything negative to say about you being the highest paid. That's the difference.
Yeah, and I think...
But you got to, like, I want you to really think about that. Like, so when we, got to remember, when we sit here in this contract and you say, oh, he ain't worth it, he ain't this and this and this and this and this, and then you sign it, it's easy for us to say, you ain't worth it. Click. No.
With the massive following that the guys got.
Yeah, nah. Good shit, bro. Even though we know what you did, good shit. What you said to me, that has no bearing. You signed the contract. You the biggest. You signed it. They gave it to you. Then you're worth it. If someone gave me 111, then they thought I was worth it. You know, that's the difference. It's not like we're going in there and saying, hey, I'm 111. And you're like, okay. So this is a billionaire. He knows what he's fucking investing in. You know what I mean?
He's so a billionaire, like, for a reason.
You know, so that's the difference between, you know, players and media. We have two different thought processes.
Yeah, I think, and this is sort of an old school media thing, is you're not bigger than the story, right? So you are the show.
Mm-hmm.
Media's job is to talk about the show and to talk about you, right? Don't try to outshine you or be a bigger side story. So, like, if Skip Bayless is going at LeBron, calling him whatever, like, he had no jump shot. He called him Choke James or something, whatever. Remember that back in, like, Cleveland, Miami days? LeBrick, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, he is, LeBron is the show. Back to what we were saying, like, you can't tell him he sucks. You know?
Like, the content.
I understand you can argue, you can have an opinion.
The player, like, I think you made a great point by saying, like, the players are the content. So how can you ever degrade the content to a form where they're the reason why you have a lifestyle, mm-hmm. why you have a job?
It's probably why you got into the job at some point, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, people, I think, here's the thing now that I hate with society is that everything is hot take driven. You know what I mean? It's like, I can't say nothing good because good, like, travels very slowly. Mm-hmm. But if I say something negative, it's a trend immediately, and it's, like, a hot take. And then it's just, like, I'm everywhere. It lives everywhere. So, like, I think a lot of people elect to, you know, take the low road and the low-hanging fruit and say things that's, you know, bad, you know, about other people because, you know, negative stuff just – you know, get the headlines and the stories all the time. Like, people don't want to praise, like, continue to praise LeBron. Like, he got a school, he did this, he did, mm-hmm. like, now it's like, all right, let's poke at him a little bit.
Like I understand, I understand one thing that when it comes to news, I get it. Someone has to report the bad, the ugly, and all that. And we're not going to agree or disagree on everything. So, like, as people, journalists, podcasters, celebrities, understand, listen, you can have a disagreement on one subject without disliking someone. You know what I mean? It's like having a full outfit on and like, I don't like your socks. And then he gets offended. Like, what the fuck you mean? Yo, I like the everything else. I just don't like the song. Like don't hate me and want to fight me because I just don't like one item on your fit. And it's the same thing. Like, this one item that you're talking about, I don't like it. The other 99%, I am fine with you. You know, so I can't, you know, I'm not going to push the block button on you because you said something that you don't like in that one moment. You know what I mean? I think we have to start understanding that too. And same thing with like someone like a Skip Bayless. Like you can't hate his whole game, bro. Like you not his whole game. Goddamn, there has to be something this motherfucker doing good, passing the ball, being unselfish. Well, look, he don't want to take the game winner. How about he's unselfish. How about that? You know, he believes in his teammates. Yeah. You ever thought about it? He believes in his teammates. Like, we can run that narrative different. You know, it's...
How about they wouldn't have the game winner if he didn't perform so well?
Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's, I've said this. No, you can know sports, but you don't know athletics. Know what it's like to be an athlete. And a lot of people on the media side, to be honest, don't really do that.
Yeah.
And I think...
Because they see it. They see like, oh, look. You see how open this guy was right here? It's just an easy little dump off right here. Yeah. It was an easy little dump off. That motherfucker can't shoot. Mm-hmm. So me dumping it off to get it right back was pointless. So I drove hoping that this guy sucked in so I can throw it there. Unfortunately, that shit didn't work. My bad. But that was my thought process.
You have a thought process.
Yeah.
I don't think that
we watch from TV. We watch from TV. Like,
what the fuck?
Right there. This motherfucker can't see. You know, and that's how we do it because we're looking from a bird's eye.
Armchair quarterback.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and that's
You see everything.
Yeah.
And I think what we were talking about with hot takes is they come from uninformed information. And one thing I know about Gil. I think we're talking about 80s physical basketball, 90s physical basketball, you know, and Gil will do his research, hours. And you were looking at the numbers of, I think it was field goal percentage in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Remember this?
Yeah, I was looking at the field goal percentages in the 80s and the 90s. And I'm saying, yo, how in this great era of basketball, of this tough, these motherfuckers shooting... They're averaging 40-something, 50-something percent. No, they're averaging 112 points a game, 120 points a game. Like, shouldn't he be in the 90s and the 80s? And you realize, yo, the only reason they say the 90s is the Kevin Garnetts and all these big men at the four-man came into play. So now you have a 7-foot center and a 7-foot four-man. When they were used to 7-foot center – in a 6'6 four-man. So when that athletic guard came in, he just had to dodge one long arm. Now there's two of them. You know what I mean? So technically, the defense is being better now. See, the 80s thought defense was good because, yo, you score four baskets on me, huh? When you go there, I'm a clothesline. Clothesline. Nigga, that ain't defense, bro. That ain't, you ain't stopped.
I didn't hit you good enough.
Yeah. You know, that's what they go off. They go off of how hard. Oh, this era soft. Oh, because you was allowed to just swing on me. Like you can clothesline me, choke me, get in a fight, punch me.
Yeah, it was totally different, like God versus Soul. But Anthony Mason used to guard Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. Like, put that in perspective. You get what I'm saying? Like, so, like, the hand checking and the bruising and stuff was just totally different. I think, I don't know, what year was it when the hand checking had went away? Like, it was just the arm bar and then...
Yeah, 2005, 6.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So, like, the rules and everything changed. So, like, the contact in this game is just, like, totally different now.
Yeah, but I hate when people say, well, these guys are soft. Well, first of all, we're bigger and stronger than you. Shut up. You know, if you drop all of us in your era with your rules, you are not surviving because we are bigger and stronger. We adapt to our environment. If they put in a hand check rule right now, trust me, everyone would adapt. It'd be about a week, 2 weeks. Everyone struggles trying to, because they're so used to, you got to remember, we patent our game around rules. You know what I mean? So James Harden's patting his style around the rule. So if you change the rule, our game changes. And we change it. But you're saying, what person in the 80s, 70s, 60s, 40s, 90s is stopping Westbrook from getting to the lane? Which one? None.
There's not.
No, there's none. There's no super Westbrooks at the point.
Maybe Jordan.
No. Jordan get his ass blown by. Nobody get his ass blown by. Like when I was talking about, you know, Dennis Rodman, they were like, well, Dennis Rodman, like, held Shaq down. That was Bruce strength. What the fuck does that got to do with a left-right crossover? He got to guard KD, who's pulling up for the... KD ain't sitting there, like, posting up. No, he has to guard guards now. Guards are not posting up. You got to play perimeter defense now. So that brute strength, you sitting here holding Shaq and all, that shit goes out of the window. You know, now you're just a 6'7", 210. You're Klay Thompson. Okay, you're Klay, guard Klay now. Run around and pick and rolls, Dennis Rodman. Run around, yeah.
Chase him.
Mm-hmm. Chase him, goddammit. Like, I'm a point guard and I'm in shape, and I had troubles guarding Rip Hamilton because the element of what he did, I wasn't accustomed to. Mm-hmm.
And he mastered it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm not used to run. Like, I remember my position is run around curls and do all this and learn how to. Like, that was new for me. So when they were like, all right, hey, Karan, you go to Chauncey. Gil, you go to Rip. Because Chauncey's going to post Gil up. And, oh, yeah, you're right. Wait, hold. Running around, pick. Oh, that hurt. Like, you know. Yo, Rip, he got his knee out. That's just, you know, now I'm like, this is a whole nother experience of trying to guard someone that I wasn't accustomed to. I'm accustomed, like, pick and roll this. Now I'm accustomed, like, yo, just push him that way.
Yeah. Lock him in.
Like, I don't fucking know that, bro. That ain't, I've never done that before. That's what I said. That's what, like, when Bruce Byrne can guard him, but Bruce guarding me, like, one for flat. You're not used to that, bro. You're used to crowding.
You're on an island.
Yeah, you can't crowd me coming full court.
With a
you
know, lot so of real estate.
You know, so, it's, you know, it's one of those things where it's just different.
Different, and you always got to adjust. Man, we could do this all day. This was the perfect union of the No Chill Tough Juice podcast.
Yeah.
I think it's history, podcast history.
Come on, man.
Has it ever happened before?
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Combined, baby.